Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
I've been working with a nurse dietitian for the last 6 months, and it's been life-changing. I've lost weight, healed my relationship with food, and have way more energy. Working with a dietitian online to create a personalized nutrition plan was so easy thanks to Nourish. The best part? I pay $0 out of pocket because Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
Hey, it's me, Paige DeSorbo, and I'm so excited to share my new shoe collection at DSW, filled with my favorite styles and trends for spring. Because if you know me, you know I'm kind of obsessed with shoes. And by kind of obsessed, I mean head over heels. You're going to love these shoes. So snag super cute styles like cute flats, fun heels, and cool sneakers from the Paige DeSorbo collection right now at your DSW store or dsw.com.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too, at the Team 980. Get to a little bit of NFL draft talk later on this hour with Logan Paulson. How did he put together his big board? The big fellow reveals, courtesy of Take Command. Also, 6 o'clock today, Dave Johnson, his final visit of the regular season. We'll hear from Will Dawkins as well in the 6 o'clock hours. He was on the Junks this morning, so if you missed that, best of what you got to hear. We'll get to it 6:15 before our weekend preview at 6:30. But right now, let's keep the NBA talk rolling with the best person we possibly could.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not my beat.
The NBA is entering its final weekend, and there is tons to talk about, and who better to bring on than the Pro Basketball Hall of Famer, David Aldridge, senior writer at The Athletic. DA, appreciate your time as always, sir. Happy end of hoops regular season.
Thank you, Craig. I appreciate it, man.
You and your colleagues worked on a big story this week on the heels of the Michael Malone firing in Denver. It is not common that we come to the end of the season and the winning teams are firing their coaches. Why do you think that we've now had two of these with Taylor Jenkins in Memphis and then Malone here? What was it? 4 games to go in the regular season when the Nuggets let him go. Yeah. Why has this become a thing?
I think you can look at. To me, it starts with ownership. You have a new type of owner in the league now. You've got more corporate ownership, more kind of hedge fund guys who are kind of used to, or maybe have less patience, I think, in terms of going through cycles of losing and winning that you do in all sports, but especially in team sports. You know, you don't win 60 games every year in the NBA. It's very hard to do that. Like, it's really hard because injuries and all kinds of things conspire to keep you from getting there. So you don't usually have a run like Golden State had. Like, you have to have not just a generational player, but an all-time type of player like Steph Curry to build around to get that kind of success. But these owners today are just a lot less, I think, patient or willing to go through that cycle of ebb and flow. Like, you make the second round, you make a conference final, and then maybe you lose in the first round the next year. And it doesn't mean your team was worse. It means that you got, again, where injuries or a player that you expected to play well didn't have a good season. You know, there's clashes between coaches and players or coaches and management, whatever it is. And they just aren't willing to go through that. And so you see a team like Denver, it's 2 years removed from a championship, like, you know what I mean, with a very different roster than they had 2 years ago. And there was certainly some corporate infighting between the coach and the GM that weren't on the same page. But you, at the end of the day, you look up there, the 4 seed in the West, which is just a brutal conference. Like, that shows you they've got they've not only got one of the two or three best players in the world, but they have a chance, right? Like, they do have a chance to win a championship this year, though. They need some, need a couple of things to go their way, and they need to stay healthy. But it's not like they were out of the playoffs or something like that, where you might expect something like this to happen. So it just goes to show that the pressure that's on teams and coaches and players to deliver championships year in and year out is higher than ever. And so people are just not going to be willing to kind of wait 4 or 5 years unless you're in a total rebuild. Most teams are not going to let you do that anymore. And so it's very hard to get management and ownership to kind of be okay not playing in the finals or the conference finals. They just think, well, I'll get somebody else in here to kind of get the most out of Nikola Jokic, you know. And I don't know what you can get more out of Nikola Jokic than 3 MVPs in the championship. You know what I mean? Like, but okay, good luck with that. You know, good luck. Maybe you can find somebody who can get it out of, get more out of them, but I don't know that you can.
This feels almost like a silly follow-up, considering what you just said, but like, is there any merit to this, or is the lack, like, is this a way that some owners might avoid some of the mediocrity that has been a signature of some NBA franchises over the years? Or is this so far in the other direction that it is hard to look at it as anything but a negative?
Well, I mean, look, you can, what you're hearing out of Denver is that Michael Malone had lost the locker room. That's possible. Sure. I mean, that could be. Defensively, they have fallen way off of where they were 2 years ago when they won the championship. I would humbly submit that part of the reason that they've fallen way off is because you took all the defensive players away. you know, you let KCP walk, you let Bruce Brown walk, you let all of the guys who really were great perimeter defenders leave in free agency instead of paying them, you know, which you could have, that's a choice. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
and a choice that should be said, DA, like a choice in large part made, I'm sure, by ownership, because if ownership green lights the contracts, then they would be like, hey, you guys come on back.
That's my point. My point is, you decided as a team, okay, we just don't want to pay Bruce Brown $20 million a year. That's a choice. And it's okay if that's your choice. It's okay to say, I'm not going in the second apron to keep this team together. Okay, that's a choice. But then you can't be shocked that your defense falls off when you let your two best perimeter defenders go for nothing. Like, it's not like you traded them and got something back. They left in free agency and you got nothing for them. So, you know, that to me speaks to a certain reality that I think it's hard to ask Michael Malone to build a, you know, elite defense with first and second year players, you know. And again, that gets back to the clash that he had with Calvin Booth, who's the GM, who, you know, and again, I don't think GMs do this unilaterally. I think they are told, I'm not spending the luxury tax. Build the best team you can with what you have to work with, right? So, you know, you got a max player, obviously, in Jokic. You got a max player in Jamal Murray. You've got a near max player in Michael Porter Jr. There's just not a lot of wiggle room there financially unless you bring in a bunch of rookies on rookie contracts. Okay, and you give them the marching order is you got to play the rookies. If you play the rookies, you're not going to be as good defensively. It's just reality. Like, it's nothing against them. Most rookies are not elite defenders when they come into the NBA. So you lose a little, you lose a lot, and they lost a lot. And so now you say, well, our defense is bad, so we had to make a change. Well, your defense is bad because all the defensive players are no longer here. You know, Nikola Jokic is a wondrous offensive talent. He is not a rim protector. He is not a guy that's going to shut down somebody else's, you know, best big man. He's not going to come into the middle. You know, you can't funnel things to him like you can to Rudy Gobert, and he's going to block 4 shots a game or something like that. He does. It's not what he does, right? So their strength defensively was on the wings. They had great wing defenders that could really disrupt what other teams were trying to do outside, challenge 3-point shots, and they don't have that anymore. You know, and so yes, you could say Michael Malone lost the locker room. It's a different locker room. It's not like he lost the locker room that won the championship 2 years ago. They were all good with Michael Malone, you know, like, so, you know, it's a back and forth. And so I don't know that we're going to see this everywhere in the NBA, but it's a copycat league. So I'm sure we'll see more of it, but you know, and I don't know that it's especially good for the league, but it's kind of the reality of the league.
David Aldridge with the senior writer for The Athletic here on The Hoffman Show. The other part about this, DA, that's a little more specific to Denver, but is also an interesting larger sports conversation, is that cold war between Malone, as it's been termed, the cold war between Malone and Calvin Booth. And I think of good GM head coach relationships, and you mentioned Golden State earlier, the relationship that Bob Myers had with Steve Kerr, the relationship, if you want to go in another sport and make it local, that Adam and Dan have out in Ashburn. The ability for, if a coach or a GM gets under some players or whoever else's skin, for the other one to be like, hey, let's have a talk, and then maybe we go talk as a group and we get it hashed out, because sports aren't always easy, and sometimes you got to be adults. And it seems like that relationship, not having that element, perhaps made it so that people were not psyched in that locker with Michael Malone, where if Calvin Booth was going to come down from the GM's office and be like, hey, let's talk through this, that wasn't going to work with the relationship he had with Malone. So how much of that is a problem, and how much does it underscore in your mind the importance of a GM head coach relationship, or am I overselling that part of it?
No, not at all. I think that's very important. There's got to be alignment. Like, how many times have we talked about that, you know, out in Ashburn over the last three decades or so, you know what I mean? Like, you know, your GM and your coach and your owner, they've got to be on the same page about, here's how we're going to build, and here's how we're going to sustain, and here's how we're going to retool on the fly if we have to. Like, we've got, if you start in, like, if you take Denver as the example, we've got one of the three best players in the world. How do we build around them? How do we keep building around them? Here's what we're going to do. And that clearly was not the case, I think, the last 2 years, really, but certainly this year, because they just, Mike Malone, look, coaches are interested in one thing. How do I win tonight? How do I win the game I'm playing tonight? That's all they care about. They don't care about 2 years from now, 3 years from now. They don't care about luxury taxes. They care about, how do I win the game I'm playing today? Right. And the GM, most GMs are thinking about, how are we going to still be good 3 years from now? Right. And so that's there's a natural kind of friction there. And it's okay. It's not a bad thing to have that friction, but it has to be managed, and there has to be an understanding of how you can do the best of both, which is win today, but also be able to win 3 years from now. And that's where I think Booth's position was, well, if we play the guys now in 2 or 3 years, Nikola may be a little less than he is now, but he's still going to be really, really good. And these guys will be up to speed and ready to kind of compete for more championships. That is just not what a head coach in the NBA cares about. He doesn't care about 2 years from now, because he thinks he's going to get fired anyway. So he'd rather win the games he can win right now, and win as many as he can to kind of keep himself in his job. So it's a tough call. It's a tough one, Craig. It's not easy. It just isn't easy to do. And it's hard because you have owners who are like, I want to win, but it's going to cost you all this money. You're going to have to go in the second level luxury tax. Well, I don't want to do that. You have to win another way. Right. Again, good luck with that. It's really hard to win. Like, the Celtics went all in and they got to the second apron and they kept spending. And even they had to sell the team because it was just too darn expensive. At least in their eyes, it was too expensive to keep this team together. It's hard. It's really hard to build and sustain a championship team.
Yes. Some would argue impossible. And by the way, some would also argue that's kind of the design of the league. It's a league designed for parity. And we see that as much as we can in a sport where there are five players for each team on the floor at once. And typically one of them is way better than everyone else. One of those guys is Luka Doncic. And the Mavericks decided to trade him for reasons that they've tried to explain and no one buys. David, in your 30 years of covering the NBA and sports in general, have you ever seen a scene like what we saw in Dallas the other night when he returned?
Well, it was different because instead of being beloved, he was hated. When LeBron went back to Cleveland, it was similar passions in a different way, in the complete opposite way. But yes, I've seen a team, I've seen a fan base that did not really care about the results of the game. They just wanted to vent their anger at, in this case, Nico Harrison, the GM. about the trade. And again, as we've been talking, I don't know that any GM just calls his owner up one day and says, oh, by the way, I'm going to trade Luka Doncic this afternoon. Just wanted to let you know. Doesn't usually work that way, Craig.
Nope. And by the way, it's even rarer if that has happened, which I don't think has happened very often in the annals of NBA history, that the owner goes, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't usually work that way.
No.
So, I mean, I understand that the GM's job is to take the heat for ownership decisions, and that's why Nico's in that spot. And you can rightly say, okay, even if you're going to trade him, I wouldn't have done it. But if you're going to do it, you have to get more than he got. That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
Fair criticism of him. But he didn't make this decision on some whim, and he didn't make this decision on his own. And at the end of the day, I still believe that this new ownership group that did not draft Luka Doncic, that did not have a relationship with Luka Doncic, I will say this. I'm not saying it's the only reason, but I do believe that in part, when given the information that they were given about him, they said, we're not spending $345 million on Luka Doncic. We're not doing it. You know, so make the best deal you can, but we're not doing that. And so that's a choice. You know, again, I think it's a wrong choice, but that's a choice. And so it was unusual to see that. And it's going to be, I mean, this is going to take a long time for the Mavericks to kind of get out from under. No matter what they really do in the playoffs this year or even next year. I mean, it's just hard. You know, I liken it to this. What did Nats fans feel like when they traded Juan Soto? It's like that. Like, you know, like, wait a minute. Why are we trading the best player we have and one of the best players in the league and the one guy that my kids want to come see, right?
Right.
It's very emotional. It's very hard to kind of go, well, it's just business. You know, it was just the cost of doing business. It's very hard to look at an ownership group that's worth billions of dollars saying, you know, we just can't pay that. It's just too much money. And we'll see you later while we're counting our money. You know, like, it's just really hard for an average fan to kind of be okay with that. They get angry about that. And so it's not usual. It's not unprecedented. It's very unusual. And I understand. I don't disagree. I mean, an owner can do whatever they want. It's their money. It's their team. I've never said they can't do what they want. But what they should do is explain why they did what they did. That's what I think ownership has to come out front and say, this is why we did this. And you can blame me because it's my team, instead of letting your GM take all the bullets. That never has sat well with me in, you know, almost 40 years of covering sports.
David Aldridge, senior writer for The Athletic, with us here on The Hoffman Show. Last thing for you, DA. Let's look ahead to the playoffs. The Western Conference is incredibly tight below the one seed. Houston's pretty locked in, or at this point is actually numerically locked into the two seed as well.
Right.
But all the way down from 3 to 8, it's anyone's game. Do you think that this is going to be a really competitive playoffs, or is this really actually a really fun undercard to the Oklahoma City Thunder Invitational, because the Thunder have had genuinely one of the best regular seasons in the history of the sport?
No question. They have, and they have earned it. And most of the teams that are at 66 with two games left. So they have, you know, depending on whether they play their guys or not. I mean, they'll have somewhere between 66 and 68 wins. You know, if you go back and look at the teams that have had won that many games, almost all of them have made the finals, and most of them won the championship, right? So they certainly should be the favorite, but nothing is going to shock me in the Western Conference. Nothing is going to shock me other than, well, I mean, I was going to say other than an 8 beating a 1, but if Minnesota's the 8?
Yeah.
You tell me Anthony Edwards can't go off in a 7-game series and average 40 a game? Yeah, he can. You know what I mean? So so it's so competitive. I mean, the Clippers have been playing so good. And they're going to be the 5 seed probably, or the 6 seed. You know what I mean? Or maybe they're the 4. But, I mean, even if they're the 4 seed, that means they got to play OKC the second round. You know, it's brutal. It's just brutal. It's going to be incredibly difficult. So I always believe that it comes down to injuries. When you get to the playoffs, the healthiest team usually wins, because they're all good. It's usually, so it's the healthiest good team, right? So I think it'll come down to who can stay healthy over these next 2 months and get to June and conference final with most of their team intact. And that to me is going to be the signal in the West. In the East, I mean, look, all due respect to there's very good teams. I think Indiana is the one team I look at that I go, wow, they've got a shot, because they're very deep and they defend pretty well. And they've got a couple of really great offensive players, but you would look at this and go, Cleveland and Boston have kind of separated themselves from everybody else. And I will be surprised if it's not Cleveland and Boston in the conference final. Right. And I would agree with that perspective. I mean, I just think they are the two best teams, and they are both excellent defensive teams. And I suspect they will be good. And I suspect they will make their way to the conference finals, and one of them will win out. But the West is, it's really tough. Like it's just competitive. It's not like there's two good teams and six mediocre teams. It's like there's six really, really good teams, and you know, a couple of guys that have great individual talents, like Minnesota and Memphis, and that, you know, they have a puncher's chance. So it's going to be crazy out West.
Yeah, and you look at, for instance, the winning percentage the Warriors have since the Butler trade, especially when he plays. Right. That's right there somehow with Oklahoma City's 66-68 win season. They barely lost. Yeah. So get some small sample sizes of fun to try to predict with as well. DA, I'm sure we'll talk to you throughout the playoffs. Thanks so much for your time, as always, sir, and have a great weekend watching these seeds sort themselves out.
Okay, thank you, Craig. I appreciate it, man.
All right, that is David Aldridge with us here on The Hoffman Show. And we get back, a little football action. Logan Paulson's put together his big board, but it was a lot harder than it was last year and in years past. Why is it so difficult? Logan will discuss next here on the Team 980.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps. Restrictions apply.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 40% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980. Take Command. Of course, the podcast to do with Logan Paulson. If you want to get questions in for the mailbag edition we're doing next week, it actually won't be with Logan. It'll be with John Keim filling in for Logan while Logan is in London on vacation. So you can submit your questions at Hoffman.sports on Instagram or by going to HoffmanShow.com. Use the contact link and you can get your questions in for me and for Keim to answer. But before Logan left in our final episode, he shared how much struggle he had putting together his big board this year. It was just way harder for him than it was last year. Why? That's where we lead you here on a Friday. Let you listen in on Take Command here on the Hoffman Show. You have been working on your big board, and you signed on to the StreamYard here this morning. And you just go, dude, this thing's a beast to put together. No pun intended on the beast, a beast for Logan. Why is putting together your big board so much harder this year than it has been in years past? What is it about this class?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting. Like last year, it felt like very, that's probably spoiled me a little bit. Last year's the first one I did one like in earnest. Like I've done them before, but it's always been a little bit like I'll use someone else's rankings and, you know, kind of like kind of parse those together or use something like the beast right to kind of help me kind of guide the process. And this year I'm kind of doing it, or last year was the first year I did it in earnest.
You're doing it, you're baking from scratch as opposed to a starter kit.
Correct. Yeah. And so like this year, like last year, I felt like it was, I don't say obvious, but it was very clear. It's like, these players are good. Like these guys are like worthy of a, like, you know, top five, top 10, top 15 pick. And it just kind of fell really nicely. And there was some subjectivity to it, like, you know, Latu versus Jared Verse or whatever, but like they were both going to be good. You know what I mean? It just depends on how good and what system and all that kind of stuff. This year, it just feels like there's way more questions about the prospects, way more uncertainty. And like for me, uncertainty tends to drive people down boards. You know what I mean? So like in this year's class, like we were just talking about the edge rushers. Like I look at the edge rusher and there's one guy, Abdul Carter, who to me is definitively the best, maybe the best player in the draft. Like he's like top three for sure for me. But then after that, it's like, you know, the difference between Mike Green right now is my second guy. But again, I don't have any off-field information about him. But like the difference between Mike Green, Donovan Ezuraku, Nick Skorton, Sherman from Texas A&M.
Shamar Stewart. Yeah.
Shamar Stewart, right? Like James Pierce, like it's very, very small. Like it's almost to Landon Jackson before there's like a definitive difference. Like I really like Mike Green. He might be in his own tier, but again, then there's that off field stuff. So like, and then I kind of was like going through and I was like, if I was tiering this last year, like where would all these guys go? And to me, it's like, oh, they'd be in this like 20 to like 45 type range, you know, like even Shamar Stewart, who I love the athlete. I love the physicality, just not overly productive. There's not over like a ton of polish there. So like, I like the player, but again, is he worth a top 10 pick? Like, probably not, you know. Walker from Georgia is another guy that I find really interesting because he's like this off-ball linebacker hybrid. And I know there are people that absolutely love him, but I'm like, he's not great at off-ball linebacker. He's not big enough to play true edge. He's got good pass rush juice, but there's risk there. We talked about that with Jeremy Green. Like, so yeah, you're like, that's going to push down. And then, well, there's other positions that should fill that up, right? That's how it should go. Like, if
right,
there's
in
uncertainty.
Theory, yes, but not this year necessarily. And so all of a sudden in every single mock draft, Jalen Walker is being mocked eighth to Carolina.
Yeah.
And it's like, how is a dude with this many questions the unanimous eighth pick in the draft?
Yeah. And again, like just to be clear, like he's a good football player. But yeah, and if he went to Washington at 29, I'd be like, damn, like good for us. You know
right
what I mean?
But also you wouldn't be based off the talent, you wouldn't be like, this is totally ridiculous that he fell.
Right. That's exactly right. It's the same. It's exactly right. And then you talk about Like, it's the same thing with the safeties. Like, I love Malachi Starks. Like, he, to me, should be a top 10 pick, but I see some people mocking him at 30 or 28, and you're just like, okay, like, he's a good football player, wasn't overly productive, but, like, he's one of the better football players in this class. And then Nick Amon-Worry is another interesting one because there's such a projection. Like, I think the PFF guy said it the best yesterday. Like, physically, he's got everything you want, but, like, is he a true, like, box safety? You know, because he's not a great tackler. He's not overly physical. There are games where he flashes, right? Big, explosive, athletic stuff. But the consistency is not there. So it becomes more of a projection. And, like, I think I've said this before on this show, like, the higher a prospect goes, the more certain I am about the prospect, right? Like, that's right. Ultimately what it boils down to. So when it kind of all shook out, like, I just finished my first tier of guys. I think I had six guys that were like tier one-ish type players. And even that, I'm like pushing guys in there because people got to get drafted. You know, that was the other weird thing about it. It's like, you know, some people say, oh, I don't put second tier guys in my mock or my big board. Great. You know, but people have to get drafted there. They have to. So like, where do you put them? Like, do you just say, oh, there's no tier two guys, I'm not drafting anyone between 10 and 25? Like, no, that's ridiculous. Like, you got to draft somebody there. So like, I fill mine in is basically what I'm saying.
Yeah, so guys wind up moving up. And maybe that's that type of thing where you elevate based off of your need. It's like, well, this is the next best player on the board, and this is the position that we go. The other thing that's weird, I think, about this class, and especially if you contrast it with last year, is the quarterback class is just not good.
Yeah. And well, I mean, Cam Ward, I would say.
Cam Ward's a good player. Yeah, but like, he's the fourth or fifth. Now, again, last year's quarterback class is insane, but he's the fourth or fifth guy off last year.
Yeah.
Like, where do you have him relative to Penix and Nix?
So, yeah, I guess to me, he would have been slightly ahead of them. Like, he's in that group, like that cluster of guys. You know what I mean? Because it's like.
So he's below Williams, May, Daniels.
I was big on J.J. McCarthy. So yeah. J.J. McCarthy was in that first group for me. So he's like, you know, 5, 6, 7, however you want to slot them. I personally like him a little bit better than Penix. I felt like Penix was a little bit robotic. I felt like Bo Nix was a little bit of a check down Charlie. I fell in love with Cam Ward's like playmaking ability. You know what I mean? Right. And so, but there are guys that are going to say, well, that Logan, that's insane. He's definitely after Bo Nix. Like, that's where the subjectivity of that second tier of quarterbacks, like, become, you know, when you're comparing it to last year, becomes a thing, you know? So that's what I'd say is I like him a lot. I like him a lot more the more I watch him. I think he does some really special stuff. And we were talking about this off air a little bit too. Like, there's certain players you like their background. And yeah. I like the fact that he started at a small school. He wasn't highly recruited, and he just had to grind and work and learn new offenses because it shows me a passion and support of the game. And I think we're going to talk to Dane about that a little bit with some other guys. But I really appreciate that, especially after seeing what Jaden Daniels was last year, especially after seeing what Bo Nix was last year. Like, these guys that had to face adversity, like, they can handle some of the stresses of playing the position at the NFL level. And I'm not saying he's going to be amazing, but I do think there is the potential that he's a top, you know, like 12 guy in the league at some point in his career. And I think that's very reasonable.
Yeah. I mean, Cam, legit, I got Dane's quarterback list up, first round grade, right?
Yeah.
Shador's the second guy. He's got a first, second grade on him.
Yeah.
Jackson Dart, second, who, by the way, I saw talk about guys getting pushed up positionally. I saw Todd McShay and his mock 3.0 has Dart going second. Off the board, quarterback wise, 9 to the Saints because he thinks this guy more resembles what Kellen Moore has worked with in the past. And maybe that's the direction they go if they go quarterback. By the same token, if I'm the Saints, I'm like, I don't know. I'd probably just rather trade back into the 20s and take him there because he's probably going to be available. So, but it just shows that, like, the idea that Jackson Dart could go top 10 based off of the tape and based off of, you know, the evaluation feels crazy, but he's in the right draft if he wants that to happen for himself. And then this year, quarterback 6 last year was Bo Nix, and he went 12th overall, I think. Quinn Ewers is quarterback 6 this year. He might not come off the board until the 3rd or 4th round.
Yeah. I mean, I like, right now, I'm not super high on Quinn Ewers, like probably 5th, 6th is feels. Yeah. Again, like 4th, 5th, 6th, it's all kind of in the wash, but I think it speaks to your point. Like, who, like, there's like 4 guys that I think maybe could do it, 5, you know, like the kid from Syracuse, I can't remember his name at the moment.
Kyle McCord, baby, let's go.
Kyle McCord, I think he's got a shot at being a high-end backup somewhere. Tyler Shuck, just from the physicality, but he's 26 years old. Like, He's 26 years old. Like, yeah. What are we doing here? And then it's Dex, it's Dart, and then Shador and Cam Ward, obviously. So that's kind of my.
By the way, on the quarterback class, Jalen Milroe is an ultimate wild card because athletically, that dude is a freak.
Yeah, and when I did my initial quarterback ranking on the Ticket to the Draft show, he was my fifth guy over Kyle McCord, and I think the athletic upside is tremendous. But then I kind of was talking to Jeremy Green, I was talking to my producer about it, and I was just like, I don't know if he's ever going to get the opportunity to actualize any of these athletic traits. You know, like, he's a freak, right? But like, he's going to be a backup quarterback. Like, how many reps is he going to get? How studious is he going to be? Is he going to develop the way, you know, Josh Allen did? And Josh Allen developed because he got a ton of reps, you know? And I think that's where it's, to me, it's really challenging to, with this quarterback class. And, you know, even with like Jackson Dart, man, like, it's a huge projection. Same thing with Shador. Like those guys are more similar than I think people want to admit, but it goes back to the original point of like putting this big board together. Like, the quarterbacks are all over the place, right? There's not a great, it's not a great offensive skill class either. The offensive line is kind of middle of the road this year. I think there are some really good, like, I think, you know, Armon Membu, I think Will Campbell are going to be kind of special. Like, they're like first tier type players to me, even though there's some questions about the arm length, about the experience, like physically, like when you watch the tape, you're just like, man, these guys are so good. Like, they're so good. Their floor is so high. Like, why not just bet on them? But after that, you're kind of like, you know, Josh Simmons coming off the knee. You've got Connerly, who I really like, but again, is a little, got some growings physically to do, you know. Donovan Jackson from Ohio State. I played left tackle. I think he's a safe projection at guard, but again, like, end of the first round. And so, like, you lose all like the middle meat of a good first round. And I think that's one of the things, like, I was doing a show with Fred Davis, and he was like, I want, instead of one first round pick, I want 2 second round picks this year. I just think that's where the value is. And that's kind of what this process is showing me. Like, I was doing edges like the other day and trying to rank them in my horizontal board. And I was like, these guys, I'd like to pick all of them between 20 and 45. Like, that's it. And so again, like, that's not going to happen. Someone's going to get bumped up the board, but I think it speaks generally to like the assuredness, the confidence I have in the players. I think they're all good. Like, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But it's just like, none of them are like these surefire top 10 guys. You're like, yes, this is it.
I feel like we talked about this a little bit last week or at some point, I don't remember which show, but like, let's clarify the difference in like, what's a top 15 guy versus a 20 to 40 guy. Like, is it just the sureness that he's going to be good? Is it the upside? Is it like the potential to be great? And I guess it could be really all of those things. It's like, which one do you have? If I like 100% know you're going to be a good football player, okay, great. If my now at 85%, well, that's going to drop you down. If your upside is Pro Bowler, all pro, like, that's going to bump you up. If I think, like, you're probably going to be a starter I'm comfortable with for 5 years, that's going to bump you down compared to the all pro guy. Is that really kind of the basis of it?
Yeah, I think it's definitely. So to me, it comes down to confidence, right? Like, what's the confidence that you are going to be a serviceable starter in the NFL? Like, that's like baseline to me for like a top 15 pick, right? And obviously you want guys that have a ceiling, right? So like, to me, the top 15 like designation is like, hey, here is the floor. It's very high. I think Joe Alt is maybe the best example I can think of in recent history of this. Like, his floor was like sky high. He was going to be like a starting caliber, you know, like left tackle in the NFL. But after watching him through his rookie year, like, it's like he could be a Pro Bowler, right? Like, that's kind of the ceiling for him now after seeing him kind of execute that. And I think that's what, like, when you look at Will Campbell and Membu, it's like, they're very, very good. Their floors are very, very high. But they also have the ability, you know, if they kind of work at it and develop a little bit, develop the way you would think based on their physical tools, that they could potentially be kind of, you know, Pro Bowl type guys, guys that you can build your franchise around. And again, they're not that right now, but they can develop into that. Then you move down the list, and like Connerly, I think, is a really good point of comparison in this year's class. Like, athletically, it's there, but the floor is a little bit lower. Like, the bust rate's a little bit higher. And the ceiling is maybe close, but not quite as high. And I think that's where the distinction comes in. Like, Shamar Stewart is another interesting example. Like, physically, yes, the ceiling is tremendous, but the floor and the bust rate are very, very high because of the lack of production. And I think he'll be a good player because he's so good against the run. But it's like, are you ever going to actualize like that 10 sack a year type guy? Are you ever going to get your Aiden Hutchinson out of him? people would say yes, but like I'm saying, that's more of a risk than you want to admit, I think. And so that's where, again, some of that uncertainty levels out. Like, so like, just to give you an example, like my top seven guys are like Cam Ward, because I'm pretty confident he's going to be a good football player, like in that first tier of player. Yeah. Cam Ward, Ashton Jeanty, Colston Loveland, Membu, Will Johnson, Malachi Starks, and Derek Harmon from Oregon, the defensive tackle. Like, yep. That's my first group of guys, right? And so everyone's like, well, no Mason Graham. And I think Mason Graham's really good, but he's got short arms. Is he ever going to be an elite pass rusher in the NFL? He was never that in college. And when you look at the guys who are making a lot of money in the NFL right now, it's guys that rush the passer. Yeah. So, like, that's where it's like, yeah, his floor is high, but where's his ceiling? And so that's where a guy like Derek Harmon from Oregon, I think, jumps him, because his floor is high and his ceiling's high. And that's how I feel about that entire group. Like, you know, people like No Tetro McMillan. Like, I think Tetro McMillan, I like watching him. He's my number one receiver. But, like, there's questions to me about his consistent work ethic, like, on the field. Like, he takes reps off. Like, can he consistently separate? I love how he catches the
football. And then the comments come out that he's like, yeah, I don't really love watching football. And you're like, oh, that probably matters less if I don't see that on the field sometimes.
Right. Right. And so that's where it's like, those are questions, right? And it's like, are you ever going to be a true X? If you're like, you could be a good pro, but are you going to be a true X? So if I'm taking that top 15 guy, the guys that I listed out are guys that I think have high ceilings and high floors. And everybody else is a little bit like, you know, who else I'd probably think about putting in there is Mike Green. Mike Green could potentially make it in that group. But again, the off-field stuff to me, I don't know it, so I can't speak to it. So that adds a level of uncertainty that makes me a little bit nervous.
Yeah, and so the off-field stuff with Green is there's multiple sexual assault allegations against him.
From Virginia, right?
Yeah, well, there's one in high school, and then there was another one at University of Virginia that never fully got investigated because he left. And you know, he says that, you know, nothing happened, you know, so he denies the allegations, the accusations. But there's obviously a lot of teams really concerned about it, especially because it's multiple. And like, you have teams, I really appreciated Howie Roseman saying this on McShay's podcast back at the combine. He was like, if there's violence against women, like, I don't even watch the tape. Like, I don't, you know, like, we have a hard rule that, like, if that's in your profile, then that's a no-go for us. And that prevents you from having the conflicted feelings that you might have if you watch the tape and you're like, oh my God, but this guy could be like, you know, you just said you have him in your first tier of guys as a player.
Based on the film, yeah.
Because it's film-based. And, you know, Howie Roseman, let's say, like, and I'm sure the Eagles are going to look at, they're not just going to take the news reports or whatever at face value. They're going to do their homework. So I'm not meaning to push in one direction or the other. But if they determine, like, yeah, something happened here, they're not even going to let their scouts, like, get into it. Howie's not going to ever get into it. That guy's literally not an option for them. And
that's crazy. I mean, I think that's smart, though.
I appreciate that for sure, because
if it's legitimate, right? And I think that's right. Where you got to, like, right.
And,
figure
and again,
it out,
saying, but, like, if you do your homework and something is there and you just go, no, we don't do that here. Like, yeah. That is what having morals, values as an organization is. Like, if you're going to talk about it, it's saying that, like, man, we know, but, and some teams don't. The Chiefs don't. They don't care, because they took Tyreek Hill and stood by Tyreek Hill. And now Tyreek Hill again on Monday is getting another domestic dispute. Dude's got 10 years worth of domestic violence issues. And he's still in the league because there's enough people in the league that don't care. And then you have teams like the Eagles that clearly will take a risk on a player, because here's the thing with Philly. Like, there are certain things they're like, no, this is, you know, how he said, like, that's a no-go for us. They were comfortable enough with whatever with Jalen Carter and the driving thing that happened at Georgia and whatever else was around Jalen Carter. And they think that, you know, hey, that's something that for whatever reason we can tolerate. So, like, I don't mean to say that as like a moral high ground here or there. I'm just saying each team is going to have their own rules, and there's going to be guys that rise or fall on draft night, both because of things that that we don't know about. And that could be off the field or medical, or, like, there's going to be GMs that interview guys and fall in love with them. They think, like, oh, I saw a speck in the Iowa game of talent, and I talked to that guy, and I can get the best. I know that we can get the best out of him. And it might work out, but also sometimes those wind up being just as big of mistakes as the guys that they screw up in the other direction.
Yeah, it was so interesting. I was talking to, like, a director of security for a different team when I was at the combine, and I was like, you know, so-and-so. And he wasn't giving me any specifics, because he can't, but it was like the amount of information that they have. He kind of passingly was like, oh, there's this player X, right?
Yeah.
He was like, oh, in high school, he got this. And like that was, and I was like, you went back and looked at his high school stuff? Yeah. And it's like, oh, he had this issue in college, but like we've met him and we've talked to him about it, and it's fine. And I was just like, the level of detail that these teams go, like that's where like this is such an unfair process, I think, for the media to do this, because the amount of information that these guys have medically, personality wise, like work ethic wise from the coaches is just on a different level. You know, it's just on a completely different level. Like they've met these guys, they know how they're wired, they know how they're going to fit in the building. And so like when you're like, that's another thing about for me putting together a big board, you said, oh, do I do it for the Commanders? And part of it's like, yes, but also like, I don't know the guy. And I know that that's such an important part of their process, you know? And so to me, it's unfair. It's unfair to me even be like, oh, why didn't the Commanders take player X? Because I think he's really good. Like they have infinitely more information than I do. And so that's another thing that makes this really hard. The Jeremy Green one, the James Pierce one, like, you know, the thing, even with Tetro McMillan, like if you talk to him, because I heard that that clip came out from when he was his sophomore year of college, right? So he's a different player now. Like I'm sure he watches film now, like talking to his coach, understanding what he's, how he's wired and what his work ethic looks like, it's going to be different. And so I think that's another thing I respect about Dane and the Beast is he does do a lot of this scouting stuff. And that shows up in the Beast, which is great too.
Yeah, so you get so much of the story, which is so critical to understanding the person and thus understanding the player. It's kind of funny that, you know, we do all this work and we feel like we know so much, and we do, you know, genuinely put in a ton of work. You put in an unbelievable amount of work for this, and you're still, you know, flying half blind based off what the teams are doing. And by the way, the teams still are bad at this, statistically speaking, because it's impossible to be great at it. There is every team, every great general manager, Howie Roseman, Adam Peters, on down the list, they all have their misses. And a lot of them, this is still, with all of that information, a giant crapshoot. And it's there's no better way to do it. This is the best we got.
So did I tell you, like, Fred and I had a bet last year where we picked five prospects, and then we were like, we compared them again this year, and we're going to air the result of the bet on the show.
I just
saw the list of my guys, and I just was like, one of them, Ricky Pearsall, was shot before the season. And again, that's terrible. Can't count for that, but that affects his production in the year.
Yep.
Another offensive lineman who was never hurt his entire college career tore his rotator cuff in training camp and is out for the year, right? And then, like, you're just like, okay. And Fred had the same thing. Guys that he was really high on, very healthy. And then, like, so he ended up picking Brock Bowers, which is probably going to help him out long-term here in terms of the point system.
Yeah.
But, like, I remember, like, reading my report on Brock Bowers, and I was like, he needs to go to the right place to make this work for him. And he went to a place where the offense didn't have a lot of playmakers. He was the number one feature, got a ton of targets. And so it's so layered in terms of risk reward, and you can mitigate risk as much as you want. But ultimately, football is a violent game that is so situation dependent. And that's another thing that makes this so challenging in terms of the big board.
Want more from Craig and Logan? Subscribe now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. More Hoffman Show next on the Team 980 and the free Odyssey app.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this: flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
MLB.TV is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
He got it! This is unbelievable!
Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Gone!
Everything baseball. All season long on MLB.TV. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.